biggest challenge today in biology is not how we generate data, rather how we use the data to get to meaningful insight. Elucidata's mission is to make omics data analysis simple, effective, and easy to communicate. On Polycast, we'll talk about topics, papers, and ideas that you didn't get the chance to explore on a busy day in the lab. Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 1 of Elucidata's Polycast. I'm your host, Shruti, a part of the bioinformatics team here. And at Elucidata, we're all about the omics and the recent trends in our community. One particular trend that stands out to me is how lab research projects have evolved. Projects often incorporated analysis of microarray data as an additional layer of proof. And now, most projects often begin with an omics analysis to substantiate hypotheses. Omics data is rapidly changing our approach to target discovery from clinical studies to clinical trials. Today, we will focus on one part of the long drug discovery process, ADME or ADME. If you're unfamiliar with this term, ADME is an abbreviation in pharmacokinetics and pharmacology for absorption, D for distribution, M for metabolism, and E for excretion. Simply put, this phrase encompasses the different aspects that scientists study to understand the response of a host organism on the drug. And today I have with me a duo. We know them as AJ and JJ. JJ is an industry veteran with over 2 decades of experience at Pfizer. And today's topic, ADME in drug discovery, is something JJ has contributed to extensively. AJ, of course, is one of our own. And as the founder of Elucidata, AJ is committed to making omics analysis effective and accessible for researchers across the industry. With that, over to you, AJ and JJ. We're all excited to hear about ADME.
Thanks, Shruti. So this is AJ. I go by Abhishek Jha. That's my full name as well. For those of you don't know me, you might hear my dog in the background and my son at times. I'm very happy and delighted to have JJ join me today. And one of the highlights of doing what I have been doing for the last 4 years is to meet a number of people along the way, and some of them have an enduring impact on the way you think, the way you approach. And it's just a delight to know them and count them as friends. JJ is definitely one such person for me, and I'm lucky to know him. And very happy to for him to agree to join us for our first episode. JJ himself has had a significant, long list of contribution to the industry, and I'll let him, talk to us through it. So, just to kick things off, JJ, why don't you tell us very briefly about your own personal story, and also we will dive deeper into your professional story of your contributions over the years to the industry.
Sure. So, hi, JJ is John Januszewski, sitting here in my kitchen in Rhode Island. As Abhishek said, I've recently retired from Pfizer, and I'm currently working at NIH NCATS. I had the great opportunity to work with Abhishek and the Elucidata team while at Pfizer for the last 5 years. So my background has been in high throughput ADME screening and drug discovery. But about 5 years ago, we at Pfizer started a metabolomics unit in our group, led by Darren Dumlau. And Darren and I worked with Abhishek's team extensively over the last 5 years, trying to describe and articulate or embed a role for metabolomics and drug discovery in our group. And since we came from an ADME background in screening and a specific remit in the organization, we tried to take metabolomics into that area. And that is how we began working on this project and meeting Abhishek. And likewise, it's been great and very impactful on how we're thinking about, or how I'm thinking about, going forward in drug discovery and what the opportunities are. So it's been great.
Wonderful. JJ, so one of the slides that I often use in my presentation or also in my communication is where we look at, And for those who you might not have seen the slide, it shows the mass spec instrument at the center. And on the left, you have how traditionally people have used mass spec instruments to study what Shruti said, you know, the effect of a host organism on the drug. So how does the drug get eliminated from the host system, for example, and so on and so forth. On the other half of the slide is how the same instrument can be used to study the other half of the equation, namely the effect of the drug on the host organism. And here you look at, you know, hundreds and thousands of endogenous host metabolites to be able to answer that. And they're both, you know, very interesting applications of mass spec. One of them, the one on the left, has a much longer history of being used. And at this point, it's a critical part of any drug discovery process. It's hard to imagine any biotech or pharma company which does not have access to that capability, either in-house or through some contract research organizations. Now, JJ himself has had a very critical role to play along with many of his colleagues over the years. So JJ, can we set the stage by talking about your own story and, you know, your colleagues, the conferences that you went to where, you know, these things start getting picked up? Because I believe, you know, there was a time when, you know, it was not the most obvious thing to do. So can you just walk us through that story? I have heard that from you many times. I just wanted to share that with, you know, the rest of the world.
I have in the late 90s, drug discovery was really strongly impacted by the development of high throughput screening and combinatorial chemistry and high speed synthesis techniques coming out of medicinal science, medicinal chemistry. And that was an inflection point, I think, in drug discovery. When I started, we were primarily, and the analytical role in the company was primarily driven by different detection technologies, not necessarily mass spec, and our pace was slower. And the impact of technologies that could assay across tens of thousands of compounds and to identify active molecular entities and then progress them into a lead, and develop it into a drug and into the clinic was the opportunity there was primarily, I would say, metrics driven, and that we could create a lot of chemistry, a lot of small molecule chemistry to profile. And the challenge was to differentiate that chemistry and identify the most promising hits to take forward and compete in drug discovery against other pharmas. So that was kind of the challenge for bioanalytical people. And luckily, mass spec technology hit about that around that same time. The introduction of very robust triple quadrupole mass spectrometers allowed us to get incredible sensitivity and quickly identify methodologies to profile the drugs in various experimental biology models, DMPK models. And that is kind of what we've been doing ever since. So a lot of our group's contribution has been around automation in for high throughput LC-MS, MS target-based bioanalysis. And the challenge was to work with potentially thousands of compounds a week, profile them across all the current ADME endpoints for example, permeability, lipophilicity, solubility, metabolic stability, all those sorts of endpoints, and form that into coherent screening workflow where we could, within the same work cycles as high throughput screening, roughly a weekly work cycle, where the chemist would have an idea, and instead of making just one or two molecules to profile, they would make say 100 or some potentially a whole library to go after a target or go after a lead optimization idea. And since they were ahead of us in terms of how they were approaching the issue, it was important for us to get back the information or get back some actionable data to them within, you know, a 5 to 7 day time frame, so they could take that information, generate their next hypothesis and their next synthetic strategy and go forward from there. And we weren't the only group doing this. Of course, biology was screening for activity alongside the ADME screening groups for, you know, for drug likeness, for lack of a better word. And so that is kind of where we've been. And I think, I don't know if I should go further from here, but what was always a challenge was being successful. And, you know, this change has not led to a overwhelming impact on our productivity or new chemical entities coming into the clinic and our success at conquering any number of disease models. So the lack of, you know, there was much fanfare, I suppose, around the, you know, around the late 90s, early 2000s about how this was going to dramatically change the productivity and the kind of the pharma workflows. It has, however, it hasn't led to the plethora of successful drug entities that was anticipated. And so there's been sort of a backtracking on, or not backtracking would be the wrong word, but a kind of a questions about
recalibration of the excitement around. But that's true for most of the new technologies, right? Like, I mean, most of the new technologies, when they come, generate a lot of excitement, and over a period of time, people you know, get readjust the expectations around what that technology can give.
AJ, does that JJ's journey sort of have any resemblance to your own story? And I was thinking if you could talk a little bit more about, you know, your own experience as well.
No, JJ has had a much longer and impactful story than I have had. So it does not compare. And I think, you know, the way JJ has been a critical, you know, character in these early days that he was talking about in 90s and early 2000s. And another aside is that almost everyone in my professional life seems to be connected to JJ as well. So there's hardly anyone that you meet in pharma, at least I have not, who does not know JJ or knows of JJ. So JJ, if you can also like paint the picture for us a little bit of that inflection point, if there was one. Or was it a more gradual adoption of these capabilities across different companies or across different programs within the same company?
Well, the interesting thing is, I think out of that era of metrics, a metrics-driven kind of approach to lead discovery, and well, basically serendipity, finding a lead via very high throughput screening. I think ADME screening, lead optimization, the lead optimization portion of ADME screening is, and that technology underlying that and the ability to, you know, incrementally improve your chemical, your lead matter through ADME screening has been successful and has been adopted. And I doubt many, many papers come out of Pfizer and other major pharma with ADME endpoints or ADME readouts emphasized in their you know, the impact they had on the everything about the dose and the selectivity of the lead candidate has come from ADME screening or that workflow, that basic underlying workflow, and that to the workflow I'm kind of referring to the everything from the bioassay through the mass spec based endpoint and the return of data to a project team, the decision making cycle, and has been really very, in my view, very successful. And that is one of the reasons why we're interested in metabolomics, because I think a gap there, I don't know if you want to get jump ahead here a bit, but the gap there has always been, the opportunity there is to reveal more of the underlying target biochemistry. And I think that is what is a great opportunity for mass spec and metabolomics and omics in general.
Yeah, so no, we definitely want to spend a lot of time on that gap as well, in the maybe towards the end of this podcast. But right now, I just want to hang in there just to give more context as to how the journey of any new technology or insight generation tool is in the industry. Like, there's a lot of excitement, but it's hard to ensure a broader adoption. And then there's a readjustment of what the technology can give you. So I think there's a lot of similarity between any technology that comes to the industry. And I believe that would be greatly true for the gaps that you're suggesting or talking about as well. So let's spend a few more minutes on just talking about this ADME side, the other half of the equation, if you will. So what were the key drivers of this inflection point? Was it a handful of people, a few successful case studies, some company that was really keen to make this happen? Technology, ESI, mass spec was coming up, or maybe a combination of all of these things just happened at the right time?
Well, I think it was a combination, and I think the mass spec, as a robust instrument, was introduced into pharma in around 1990. I think my original, my first mentor at Pfizer, Hassan Fuda, had a lot to do with getting the triple quad into drug discovery. And when I joined Pfizer, the DMPK department was in what we called development side operations at that time. And we began pushing in the early mid 90s into drug discovery. And luckily I got to join the group of people who were doing that. And we sort of built the car while it was moving, as they say, and we continued to kind of improve our process and improve our technologies along the way. Mass spec got more sensitive and increasingly more robust. And we evolved ways to, we always used to say, for example, that one of the challenges was typical mass specs are serial detectors. They're one at a time detection technologies. So a real issue was to get thousands of new entities along with thousands of new endpoints across a panel of ADME studies through a mass spec and out into a tabular format or graphical format that could be used to make decisions. So a lot of the technology we developed was around automation. And we often said that it was sort of like giving easy pass to all the chemistry coming through our ADME shop to align it and get it through the mass spec in a reasonable time frame, so that the organization, the engine sort of underlying that drug discovery decision-making cycle, was, could just kind of be successful and go. So a lot of what our thinking is always kind of around making the engine go, making, an interesting, just as an aside, I think I was another lucky part of my career was joining a group that really wanted to, running samples, of course, is good and very important, and having high quality data is important. But the underlying bioanalytical technology that's occurring in the industry right now is changing so fast. And so getting a group, I was lucky to have mentors who wanted to understand the best way to utilize the emerging technologies in drug discovery. And so that was partly mass spec, but it was partly sample delivery, partly laboratory automation for, you know, 96 well and 384 well and so forth. You know, automation technologies, all of those things are in our group, are in kind of the bioanalytical cohort of the organization. And so we're not waiting around for samples to arrive, but we're driving forward technology so that we can accelerate in theory drug discovery and the defining lead matter or high quality lead matter in really time efficient and resource efficient timeframes. So this is always the struggle for the bioanalytical group. We have this very, very powerful detection technology with constantly improving limits of sensitivity and information content and scan speed and so forth. The challenge is how to continue to integrate the new technology along with that base workflow that we've developed. And to this mm-hmm. day, that's kind of where we are, I believe.
And there must be other, you're talking about, like, you know, late 90s, early 2000s, so around 20 years back. And there must be groups other than yours who were pushing for something similar, slightly different approach around the same time. Is that
It's fair to say. I think all the major pharma, you know, BMS and Merck and Sanofi, GSK, all of those pharmas at the time had groups driving forward on this idea. Well, you know, it was primarily, I would say, due to HTS and combinatorial chemistry, really had an impact on our industry, I think, getting what was traditionally a development side operation into discovery. And we fit very well, DMPK fit very well, and ADME fit very well in this lead optimization. Chris Lipinski, you know, the things like the rule of five had an impact because it got people thinking about drug likeness and so forth.
I've seen that come up.
You're right.
So many,
yeah. I mean, it really was introduced, I believe, in the late 90s, but the ideas around that, it wasn't so much the rule of five per se. It was that conceptually thinking about what makes a drug, and just sort of framing our approach to optimization, to synthetic thinking about the template and the molecular entity, or your thinking across lead chemistry, and where you place your bets, and your resources. So that kind of thinking has evolved, you know, continued to evolve, and you know, with ways to enumerate chemical space nowadays with small molecule chemistries and fragment-based drug discovery and you know, DNA encoded libraries and all these types of ideas are still mining the same vein of innovation that preceded them.
Okay, so this journey that in some ways started like around 20 years back, right? What do you think is the current state of the art? For example, like, you know, a cutting edge lab would process how many compounds through their pipeline? What would be the turnaround time? What is the where people are right now?
You know, I'm my focus is fairly narrow. So relative to ADME, I think what has happened is the number of compounds that go through any one screen has reduced, but the number of, you know, the number of readouts, the number of endpoints, and the multifactorial nature has increased. So I think last count, our group at Pfizer. So this is HIT Discovery and Optimization Group at Pfizer probably runs nearly 60 different flavors of assays across different entities. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but the profiling is continued to broaden, and people are realizing that there is, with mass spec, where other reaction chemistry, whether it's transporters or whatever, are adjacent, are very easy to grab. So the content, or the, you know, we're referring to this high content screening as opposed to high throughput screening, right?
So perhaps this is a good point to segue into what I have referred to as the other half of the equation. And just to refresh our memory, we have so far been talking about what the host organism, a mouse or a human or a cell line, does to a drug in terms of how it absorbs it, distributes it, and so on and so forth. The other half would be what the drug does to the host organism. So how do the intracellular or endogenous host metabolites change in response? So JJ, can you speak in your own words about the other half, and as to also help us like contextualize how that can address a gap, if at all, in the current ADME world?
Right. So in the ADME world, again, speaking from my experience in mass spec and bioanalytical, was that we were always challenged to get higher resolution. In other words, we were always challenged to the activity across, say, three leads, or a half dozen lead molecules was about equivalent, but how do we differentiate their ADME, uh-huh, their ADME profile? And so we were always challenged for a very high resolution. And I think the result of that approach is, I think in retrospect, is that sort of a naive approach, because I think the thing that is missing is kind of the biochemistry, that the degree to each of these templates or the actives impact the target biochemistry more so than the specific, very minute, our ability to differentiate chemistry in a very, the metabolic stability or the permeability within twofold of center. These endpoints are really not meant to be necessarily high resolution, and nor should we think about them that way. I think the gap really is on, as you're kind of heading here, is on the target biochemistry side, and how we are either on target or off target, how we are modulating the underlying biochemistry. And that was the breakthrough that I think, having metabolomics alongside this group that has been optimizing lead chemistry for many years, metabolomics seem like, or omics in general now, is seeming like a great opportunity for us to take.
So a few days back, you were at a conference where I think you presented your version of what the future of ADME would look like. And I think your previous comment about how the number of compounds have gone down and the number of readouts around each one of them are going up. And you have also referred to this as high content screening at times. And I've seen you argue in favor of it in many settings. And what is your version of the future of ADME that looks like?
Well, it's just that. I think the ADME screening has developed a robust workflow, has developed something that really has proved its mettle in drug discovery. Most large organizations have a coherent LC-MS/MS-based screening workflow, or LC-MS-based screening workflow for lead optimization. And I think now, with our expertise, or this, the DMPK ADME folks, their expertise and ability to run these types of studies, I think if we can start, you know, bringing on new new modalities or new technologies and kind of put them into the same context, we can open up. We will reveal cell metabolism, you know, the underlying cell metabolism alongside drug metabolism, and that would be the goal, especially for metabolic targets like in cancer or immunology. We can really have a huge impact on teasing apart or selecting the best lead candidate to put forward. And we've seen this a bit in the recent work that we've done, and the bioarchive paper that we've produced with the Elucidata and Josefa and Sammy. That work really illustrates where, one of the takeaways from that paper was that we dose cyclosporin, which is a multi-target, broad range immunosuppressive, and we lit up this metabolomic network. Whereas, and we compared that to rapamycin, but more selective, apparently a more selective chemical entity, and we got a different network. The point is the network itself, and is that integrated omics readout we've been working with. There's two things that came out of that. One is that we can screen at that pace, relatively modest, but still a screening workflow. It works. It fits very well into what we've already developed. And secondly, the readout itself is very, in my view, it's kind of a more modern or more, I mean, modern is not the right word, but it's kind of a heuristic for decision making. It's actual information from metabolomics, whereas lists, lists of metabolites that are changing are very hard to make decisions in the context of our drug discovery decision, project team kind of format. But that particular readout across lead chemistry, lead matter, to me would give us the basis for, is actionable, gives us a basis for differentiating lead chemistry, differentiating the cell metabolism, driving lead chemistry, and potentially can lead to a more target or a more biomarker-based approach to differentiating lead matter. And I think that is a great opportunity. And I think it exists a lot in the readout itself. What I've seen coming out of other omics are transcriptomics is, there's just too much time to sort out. It takes too long to sort out what the transcriptomic readout is telling you. Likewise for proteomics, it's, this interaction with all it seems very difficult to make any kind of decision or project team based decision with that type of readout. It just happens to be that metabolomics or cell metabolism alongside drug metabolism seems like a very easy connection to make. I think a lot of the ADME folks are already starting to think about expanding their or increasing the content of their screen with other markers or other related transporters. I think this is all really heading in the same direction where we can figure out a way to rank order or profile our lead chemistry alongside the or ADME chemistry alongside cell metabolism. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And again, a lot of our audience might not be aware of the bioarchive paper that you referred to. We'll be happy to share that link when we share this podcast as well. But I wanted to steer the conversation more towards drawing parallels between the challenges that you were a firsthand witness of. You change this as well in the ADME world in 90s and what the gap that you're identifying today, right? would there be an inflection point? Will that be a slow grind? Will, like, you know, what do you see the next, you know, 5-year future look like with respect to the picture that you just painted?
You know, you know this well. So our when Darren and I first started bringing metabolomics up in these project team contexts, we were too slow, and we were giving them back readouts that weren't actionable. So the first thing is the inflection point, or there's a lot of things to do here, right? One is to, on your part, I'd like to see that readout become, or understand the extent to which we can improve the readout, improve that active network, and start teasing apart what it's telling us. For example, we might think of the percentage of, is it an anabolic network, or inherently an anabolic network, or inherently a catabolic network, or which parts of the network are catabolic or anabolic? You know, which, how do we start thinking about the network in a decision-making context? And that is a challenge.
And that's something that, you know, we have experienced as well. And we may often make the case that just having a list of things going up and down would not help you in trying to figure out what the next actionable hypothesis would be, right? You know, having a pathway or having a very specific list of reactions is a much better place in terms of figuring out what should the next experiment be, right? But as we do this, like, you know, it's not trivial to start interpreting or, you know, just diving into the readout that JJ is referring to, the active network, and figure out what the next experiment is. That's something that we're actively working on to parse that out. But JJ, that's a challenge.
Right. So that's one challenge. The other challenge is going to be that informatics translating the untargeted approach or the high resolution mass spec readout and building a pipeline to create the network. Likewise, potentially fractionating the active network using targeted approaches on triple quads. I mean, I think these kind of connections and getting, when we started with ADME, we might have had, I don't know, I think maybe we had seven ADME assays that we're profiling. We had like a permeability assay and a metabolic stability assay, and pretty much that was it. Or drug interaction screening. Those are the basic places we started. Now, you know, the global profiling, and then following that up with a metabolic flux or tracer experiment. These are all, in that context, that would be the parallel. The parallel would be those cell metabolism assays, not just one assay, but a number of ways to fractionate cell metabolism will be the new, or potentially follow the same playbook that ADME developed across, you know, metabolic stability and microsomes, or using inhibitors, or any way that the same way we thought about high content in the ADME application space, we can begin thinking about high content assays in the cell metabolism space. And that will be a great challenge for team that, you know, and I think the beauty of this is very easy kind of story to digest and understand from doing it for a long time.
Right. And I think there are two parts to the story you're making, right? One is just going from that raw data to that map, and that's something that is hard enough. But then how do you read that map is something that has to be addressed as well. How do you break that down into anabolic and catabolic reactions? And is that the summary of the readout? Because we have to figure that out. And that I think will have a significant impact.
And that is the same, you know, it's the same, and that'll be a, one of the most challenging aspects, because, you know, large pharma and groups, we have this embedded workflow, these things they've been doing for, you know, it's been very evolved slowly to the point we are now. And I think, you know, there's a lot of other technologies that are, you know, emerging as well. So for drug discovery organizations to invest in this approach is right now is a great challenge for us to kind of validate, or, you know, maybe validate is maybe the concept of validation may change in the future, but this is sort of where we are currently, is we need to have examples that we can show and demonstrate how you made a better decision based on the complement of cell metabolism alongside drug metabolism. I think that will occur, and I think it is happening. And I think it's happened retrospectively. Studies that I've seen, people have gone back and looked at, you know, why substrates were pulled from the market, or compounds that had gone all the way through clinical trials and were marketed, have been pulled for tox or any, you know, any kind of adverse reaction. And in my view, that we most likely will be able to catch those types of things that I've seen pulled, or that we've seen pulled in the last 10 years, or at least, through omics technology, specifically metabolomics for any, you know, metabolic adverse events.
So I think that is the promise of the picture that you painted at the conference, and also, like, you know, has come up a number of times in our conversation. Again, Ajay, we are, I think, hitting close to the 50 an hour, 60 minutes into the conversation. I want to pause. I hope as I started at the top of my conversation, like, you know, the excitement, the just the pleasure of, you know, talking to you, learning from you, you've been playing a role at the frontier for a long time in the industry. That's, you know, insanely helpful for us as we are trying to figure out how to address some of these problems as well in our own way. So I really appreciate. We're very thankful that you took time out, talked to us, and hopefully some of this you know, translates to a broader audience outside who will listen to this podcast. So thanks a ton. Shruti, I'll come to you.
All right. That was a pretty awesome 45 minutes. Thanks, AJ and JJ. And to our listeners, tune in to put omics in your mix with Polycast and Lucidata.